Counterpoints is back, and obviously, as of the moment of recording, it is the break before the playoffs of PGL Collusion of Poker in 2026. So, like the third event of the year, we've obviously had Blast Bounty, then we had the IEM Krakow, now we've got this PGL. Unsurprisingly, because of the timing of when we're doing the episode, we're going to pick some teams, largely ones that didn't qualify to the playoffs, to talk about, because that seemed like the most obvious, like, spicy topics, angles. And that the one I actually want to start with, Pimp, is a team that I've got to say, on this show, and most of my shows, I think analysts like this team generally. It's G2. I think most people have a soft spot for the team because, one, they appreciate the work Saw's done over his career in Ents, etc. If you even look at how he sort of remixed this version of G2, he didn't just take the G2 without Modesty and then add something. You know, he like remixed it completely. He brought in, funny enough, he brought in the kind of players that actually are kind of like Ents type players. Ones where it's like some of them haven't made it to the top yet, or some of them made me to be like put into a different role, a different cover. And I think a lot of people have a lot of time for this squad, especially because they actually, in my opinion, did it sort of the satisfying way. If you're going to underperform, which is quite early on, you get one big result that makes everyone believe, like, right, okay, well, at least if that's your ceiling, okay, you can have an event or two where, you know, you don't make the playoffs or you're not that relevant. As long as I believe, there's a chance. I mean, put it this way, when it came to the major last year, people don't remember, we genuinely did add this team as one of the last sort of, you still have to consider them a dark horse to even win the whole thing. Maybe they have another miracle run like they did at that blast in London. The problem is this, Pimp. Not only have they not done that, like, yeah, they made the playoffs to Krakow, but by the way, they were immediately eliminated. That was even a mouse we pointed out wasn't even that good themselves. Like, if you go and look, it is actually shocking now how long this roster of five players has played together and how few times they've even made the playoffs, mate. Like, at this point in time, that one blast, that isn't just the outlet. That's like the ultimate outlier, mate. They've never come anywhere close ever again to doing what they did there. And if you even look at who they win and who they lose against, bro, they just don't beat the top teams. Like, they don't even do what, like, I'll give you a contrast point. They don't even do what Aurora does, which is Aurora, at least every now and then, will just fuck around and beat, like, a really good team and you'll be like, all right, like, shit, yeah, you've got to respect that firepower. You know, in theory, they could still get together. The problem I feel like with G2 is why I think it's an interesting topic. I feel like it's an obvious squad that's in a worse version of where Na'Vi is, where it's like something has to change. But yeah, the problem is, because it's a fairly well put together squad, a bit like Na'Vi, it's not obvious who to pick. Like, if we talk about FaZe or Falcons, it's fairly obvious who you should change in these squads. I actually think the problem with the G2 one is, I think a lot of people thought, give them a few more events, maybe they're actually going to get better. If anything, I don't know that they have. They seem they've stuck at a level. And then also, I do think it's pretty hard to know who to kick out and who to recruit. So what are your initial thoughts? Where's G2 at for Pimp?
I think you summarized it pretty well. Obviously, the honeymoon tournament, there was Blast London, which is, what, 7 months ago now? Or 8 months ago now? That's long forgotten. You know, they've never been nowhere near that level ever again. I think part of the issue is that they also had a couple of excuses. I think it was at Chengdu, right, where was it Hunter who was sick in the side right. game in lower bracket before right. the playoffs. So, like, we kind of gave them a bit of a leeway in that regard, you know, be like, okay, maybe they could have done more. Then at the major, again, one game away from making it into the playoff, you're like, okay, you're giving them the excuse that, yeah, they were one game away. It could have been differently. I think they drew, was it... Who did it do in that? There was Falcons, I think.
There was the Falcons at the end, Falcons. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So you're like, oh, hard done by the draw. Maybe you should have won again.
Yeah.
So we've been coming up with a lot of excuses in that regard. But I feel like we've seen the true level of G2 here in the beginning of the season. And I agree with you. Despite Krakow being a step in the right direction, I think not doing well here at Cluj de Poker is a massive step back. And that's probably where I start to worry a lot as well. Because I agree with the way you summarized it, that the players and the project as a whole, I think that was interesting. I was probably one of the analysts, you know, that find them kind of fascinating, and I was still holding out hope for them to be good. And I honestly thought that this tournament here in Cluj de Poker would be a great tournament for them to do well and sort of build on what they did in Krakow, where I agree, you know, the playoff performance was abysmal in the sense that so was Aurora's, you know. I think they'll just outmatch, you know, and there's a long way for Aurora's, G2's, Na'Vi for that matter, to go toe-to-toe versus the likes of Vitality and Furia, so I didn't really hold that up against them. But not making playoff here, losing to the teams they've been losing to, and doing it in the fashion they're doing it as well, right? Did you beat Pain Gaming in the lower bracket? You beat Heroic in the lower bracket? I'm not really impressed by that, to be completely honest. I haven't had a single win here where I'm like, okay, that was a good game of Counter-Strike. And they had another game, you know, where they were competitive against a good opponent, but ended up losing. So for me, I'm starting to feel the same as you probably are, where something's probably gotta change soon enough. But as you also kind of hinted, it's hard to It's hard to figure out what. I think Hunter is an in-game leader. He's done a decent job, and I think he, if he wants to, he has a future in that role. Would I love to see him maybe relieved of those duties and bring in, you know, another great in-game leading prospect if there was one free in the market? I'd still buy into the Hunter stock, you know, in terms of his individual play. I think Heavyguard is a fantastic player. I think he's the one thing where I'm like, okay, I know what I get from him. I think he's really, really good, and if G2 doesn't sort their shit out, then someone else will snatch him up, you know, and they could... That's a player that could be part of a top three team in the world any given day. Again, look at Sun Payers. You look at the op role as with a lot of teams right now. I think he's struggling. I think he's not having a lot of impact. It's not even his stats, you know, because you can go in and you can look at his stats and you'll be like, yeah, he's doing like every other op right now, you know. Not too well, not too bad, but not really bad enough to be a clear cut kick, you know. He's not an ultimate for Team Liquid, I feel, but I feel like when I'm watching their games, there's just a lack of initiative, there's a lack of impact coming from Sun Payers with the AWP, and then he has these occasional pop-off games that, you know, kind of boost his stats a little bit, but I feel more often than not when I'm watching them play that he's just not playing with a lot of confidence, you know, and I don't know why that is and what you can do to change that, but I honestly thought that Saw, you know, teaming up with him again would be a good thing for him, but I'm lacking that effect. So again, I'm looking towards him as being the obvious guy you could probably replace, and then we go back to the conversation we had a couple of times, which we also discussed on the disc. Like, there's never been a better time to be a shitty orber, because there's just no one to replace you at the moment, right? So that goes for Brokey, it goes for Ultimate, it goes for Sun Payers to some degree as well. So how do we fix T2? I don't know. I think someone else has to explode for them to pick up some pieces. I'm looking at FaZe. I'm looking at T2. I'm looking at Na'Vi. I'm looking at some of these, you know, teams that are supposed to do better, where there's still a lot of qualities on some of the players. You know, as soon as they all realize at the same time that something's got to change, that's when we get to see this battle between, okay, so do the players go to G2, or do the good prospects go to Na'Vi, or do the good prospects go to FaZe? Because I think inevitably some of those players and some of those teams will have to merge together in order to be a decent team, instead of just being, you know, some of them are bang average right now. I think that's G2, bang average. FaZe is in a disaster, and Na'Vi, you know, let's see what they do at the playoff in Cluj, but I'm also starting to feel that probably something's got to change there.
Yeah, if you actually go and look, by the way, it really is as bad as I described too. Like, it's not even like this team, you know, has like, I'll give you an example. If people want to hit on Falcons, which I understand are at a different scale because of the money and the names, etc. But if people want to hit on Falcons, especially outside the playoffs, still fuck around and beat some of the best teams in the entire world. Like, they even did it at this tournament. Like, they'll at least give you, like, even if you think it's fake hope, some fake hope. If you actually go back, I was looking while you were talking. Bro, after Blast London, the one where G2 broke out, the only top team they beat is they one time beat Furia at ESL Pro League, when, if you remember, Furia began really badly and even lost to, like, fucking Pain or someone like that. Like, there was the one where they began quite poorly. Legacy, I think, oh, there it was, when they lost to Legacy as well. So they got Furia one time, that's it. The rest of the time, in the last, like, 5 months, yeah, basically, they lose to everyone who's better than them, and they beat the bad teams, and then they even have those random ones, like, if you remember, the Major lost to, like, Mongols with fucking controllers, which is like, what? So, to me, unfortunately, when you've had a roster this long, it's not like... Like, I looked it up, they've played on LAN together 96 maps, mate, this exact five-man lineup. Like, that's pretty good sample size. Like, that's a whole, yeah, season, at least. So, I also think... A bit like Na'Vi, yeah, there's no obvious person to kick. But one, you can't just not kick anyone. You have to make some sort of change. And two, because there's not an obvious one, that actually means you can have some, pick whatever direction you choose if you saw. Like, I'm with you, mate. Yeah. I'll tell you another problem they have in this team. It actually reminds me, being as the one player who is mega, is a heavy god, and he is like one of those anchor lurky type players. Bro, I've seen this story before. This is like when fucking BlameF was in Astralis. It doesn't matter how good that player is. That will never be the position to dominate World Counter-Strike. That is a position, like, if you have a ROP, so that's like a luxury position, mate. If you have that guy and you have the sick AWP or the great IGL or the great, that's when, yeah, you have the best team in the world. You can't, if, like, essentially the analogy here would be, it would be like in football, if your best player, far and away your best player, is like the central defensive midfielder. You know what, mate? You can build the level of the game up. You might not lose that many games, but fucking hell, you're not going to score many goals, are you? Like, you're going to need a striker, you're going to need some attacking midfielder, you're going to need some juice as a result. Because if I look at everyone else. Literally everyone else can take criticism here, mate. Like, obviously the Hunter anglers, you're a fresh IGL. That was a gamble. Like, we don't even actually really know. This is one of the hardest things. When I look at your roster, if you're Hunter, I can't hate on him, mate. It's not a bad roster. Like, again, I made this point on Twitter. People used to fucking go hard at my boy Alexi B when he had way worse rosters in OG and fucking NIP. He had like Hedrick as his AWPer when he wasn't even an AWPer. He had fucking Mantu. You know, these are like the best players in his teams, if people remember. So I actually think for the squad of players Hunter has, I actually would have expected a little bit more. I actually thought this was a great chance to prove yourself as an IGL. The Sun Pius one is just obvious. Like, as you say, the real problem is, even when he's had like a little bit of a glow up recently, he's never come close to what he used to be in Ents, unfortunately, when he was like a really impactful, exciting player. But I'm with you. Like, who do you recruit? Like, everyone made fun of Fnatic, remember, when they signed that Jambo guy. Who else are you going to sign? These are the level of players you haven't signed, unfortunately. And there really aren't many good AWPers out there, actually. So I'm with you. Like, it's hard to move on from that one. You just hope it all works out. And then I'll tell you where I come down on it mainly, mate. Assuming I'm not just completely taking Hunt route, I don't even know what AWP you'd recruit. So for now, I'll probably stick with some Pius. I'll tell you what I do look at, which is when I see Matisse and Malbs, I just start to get that vibe of, like, pick one. You know what I mean? One of them can stay. Okay. In theory, they're both talented players. But I'll tell you the problem I have with this squad. The Matisse guy, I still feel like, hasn't blossomed fully. That's one area where I'm a little bit underwhelmed. I still thought that guy had a bit of a... Put it this way, in an ideal world for me, him and Heavy God would be the HLTV top 20 players. And this team would at least be fourth best team. The Malbs guy, I've got to say, I actually think everyone just got sort of tricked by that half a year when he was with Monacy and Nico. Mate, he never has ever looked as good as he did then. But at the time he was with Monacy and Nico, remember what everyone who was a Malbs fan said? They said the opposite, bro. They were like, no, Nico's like taking space and resources for him. And when Nico goes, then his game will level up. And I'll tell you one area that's really worrying, mate. Back in the day, if you remember, all the time when he was in the good G2, when they won events, he would do all his impact on T-side. He would do some mad running, double AK headshot, right? At the time, people said it's just because he's forced into bad CT roles. Mate, his CT game never recovered. He's not in a team where there's no Monacy and Nico for ages now, mate. That has never, ever fixed itself. Whatever issue he had there, he just has there. So I feel like if I'm picking someone to kick out, I'd probably be looking at one of those two, mate. I'd essentially, within the org, I wouldn't pretend to know like Saw. Pick which one you think fits his role best. Go and get someone else to do all the other roles. Because actually, if we talk later in this episode, mate, about the exciting people like the Foots of the world, mate, there are players there you can take. Like, there's people who could go straight into a team like this and do work.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think the whole Malbs conversation, I tried to open it actually on the desk during Krushna Poker as well. And he's just, for whatever reason, like, he's a fan favorite first and foremost.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he has a funny story, obviously, and he's very likable. But you cannot critique that guy without, you know, people coming at you. Because I actually agree. I think he's been very underwhelming. And not to the extent that, you know, I want to say I was the first guy who, like, kind of shut down the narrative that as soon as Nico leaves, then he moves into his positions and he will do well on the CT side. I basically laid it out and described it for people this way. Nico is the best micromanagement guy on the CT side you can possibly have. He's one of the best communicators. He's one of the guys that will, you know, bring a sort of flow and a sort of motion to your CT side defense. All Malbs did. And not to take anything away, but the T-Sides, as you described in G2, that was playing by himself. He was always on an island by himself. Best example, Mirage. He would lurk out of A-Palace. He would lurk off a ramp. And usually he would do it whenever Nico or Monacy have created, you know, space in middle or try to do some sort of, you know, interpretation of what the opponents were doing in that regard. So I think his T-Side play was better than it is now, and it was legit. You know, I think he did a really good job in those positions, but CT side, he was never supposed to be in those vocal positions. And I said it from day one, I don't think it's gonna work out. And people were like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. He has the aim, his aim will back up for it, and he learned to communicate. Learning to communicate and learning to be that type of player, it's not something you learn. Either you got it or you don't. And another great example of that is Sun Pius. I think it was Dupuis who said in an interview at some point that one of the biggest issues for Sun Pius and Falcons was that he didn't take any initiative. Like, the players had to ask Sun Pius, hey, what do you want to do? You know, they had to, like, constantly remind him, hey, take initiative, do something with the op, you know, kind of dictate wherever you want to go. And he just didn't do that at all. You know, you could point that out, right? for half a year or for a year or for 2 years for some players, it's still the same issue today. I feel when you're looking at him play, he doesn't take enough initiative. He doesn't play with enough confidence. So I'm of the belief that, yeah, you can obviously improve in certain aspects of the game, but you can never go from being a player that is playing your style of Counter-Strike, which is on an island by yourself, where all you rely on is your aim and your own intuition, compared to a position where you have to communicate with three different people at the same time while also focusing at your aim. I think that's why CT side play took a massive, massive hit. And then I thought to myself, okay, Saw comes into the team, he'll find a way to activate him. He'll find a way to move back into some better roles. But that's kind of what I lack to see from G2 and from Melts, you know, the willingness to maybe give up on that project and then at the very least try to move him into different positions or other positions. And then we go back to the conversation with Edward Heavyguard. He's occupying some of the same way of playing, you know, as that anchor role Melts used to be, at least on the T side. So you can really move Melts into those positions. So I'm almost willing to say that if it was between Mattis and Melts, I'd probably get rid of Melts, because I do think you can find, as you said as well, young players with the flair for the aggressiveness and the flair for playing connect on Mirage, the flair for being you know, the center of attention. So in that regard, it's a massive loss for G2, because he was a huge investment. He was a guy that was supposed to take over from Nico, but at some point you got to cut your losses. I'm not gonna lie.
Because the other thing about G2, this is my last main topic on it, goes like this. I mainly judge this particular project according to like the perspective of Saw as the coach, Hunter as the IGL, because they're like the people heading it up and you assume they have the say and you know how things are done, etc. But there's actually a bigger point about the G2 org I want to make here, which is if people are going to criticize, you know, Falcons are spending loads of money and being a big deal. Team Liquid's what we always bang on like a motherfucker if they're ever irrelevant, like now when you've got the money to sign players and you should be an attractive destination. I also think, even though it's just PR, the stuff that G2 CEO said last year, mate, was some of the dumbest shit I've seen said in a long fucking time. And some of it was at the end of 2024 as well. If you remember, he came out and he made two different statements. One was, he quite literally said words to this effect of like, we could have just kept Nico if we'd wanted, which is just, I'll never understand why you would ever communicate that to your fans, mate. Because to me, if I'm a G2 fan, right now I would just be going, can we have Nico again? Like, what is this shit? Like, by the way, Nico would even be in the position of one of the two players we just discussed, Cotton Bro. Like, I mean, think about it right now. Imagine you take this G2 roster, pick whichever one you want. It'd probably be Matisse if you look how they play, and you drop Nico back in that spot. Man, they'd immediately be in, like, they'd probably be in a bunch of finals and semis immediately, like, tomorrow. And that's even without Nico being at his best. Then there's the whole thing of, like, even when they let Nico go, because I believe he said the Nico comment, like, at the last season of Nico in 2024, it was implied to me, like, the reason why it doesn't matter if Nico goes is because at the time, no one knew that Monacy would definitely follow him to Falcons. Maybe Monacy was going to stay in G2. Right, I'd have at least given that CEO guy a tiny bit of grace that if somehow he'd kept Monacy, but then he'd lost Nico and he'd just believed the story we just said earlier of like Malbs would be the new Nico or like Teemu Nico, you know, and it'll work. At least that would have a logic to it. I think that's the problem with G2. If I take my head out of I'm just looking at the Hunter and Saw project, I look at the bigger thing of where G2 the org, mate, you just look silly with how you've done, even though they weren't bad individual moves. You have downgraded your roster. Like, you used to have Nico Monacy, and we all used to expect every tournament, like with Falcons, you should have a chance to win this thing, and even you even would nick the odd blast. It was a real thing. Now you've won one blast. It looks like you'll never win another one with this roster as it is right now. You're going to need major roster overhaul. And then remember, he even did that thing at the time where, even though this one's a bit more contentious, even in that same interview, low-key like flamed Simple and was like, we just don't need him, basically, which is like, these are such weird comments to make when your team, again, is putting out a squad that, as pointed out here, barely makes the playoffs. Like, you're sort of, listen, you're relevant in the sense of you're in the top 10 for me. You're not relevant beyond that, though. Like, as I just said, if I'm Fury of Vitality, I'm never scared that you're going to beat me and knock me out of the tournament. Or if I play you in a round of six match, great. If I'm Mouse, it's like, cool, we're going to the semis, boys. Like, there's actually teams in the round of six might beat us, like a Paravision or something. They won't be at this point. So I also feel like, as an org, G2's supposed to be a contender for like biggest esports org in the world, mate. They're supposed to be like a giant club. So that's the other problem I have is, I feel like in CS, one area we are unfair is, we will criticize people like Mouse. Mate, Mouse isn't fucking G2. Holy shit, like in the game in CS, they can compete them. As a bigger org, they're relevant compared to G2. And by the way, I don't even know Mouse in the other games, like Dota and League. I think they don't even have fucking teams, mate. Like, they're basically CS and some other shit that I don't even know. Maybe Rocket League or something, I don't know. But they're not. So does that not bother you, that a massive org? Because even though everyone says FaZe has no money, I think we all think the same thing with FaZe. Like, bro, the name FaZe, though, FaZe is supposed to be giant, you know.
Yeah, it does bother me, but I'm also, I don't know if that's the thing lately, because we've seen so many big orcs, you know, just falter, you know, but obviously Astralis, great example, Fnatic, great example, FaZe now is going down that route, T2 to some extent the same, you know, I think, I don't know why I'm not that attached, you know, to that aspect of the orcs, you know, I think name value wise, then sure thing, G2 should be doing better, and they should be attractive to play for, but I've also heard, you know, and I don't know if that's true, maybe it's just circulations and rumors, but, you know, the amount of money they have, you know, allocated to the CS division is nowhere near the same as they had when they had Modesty and Nico in the lineup. You know, when that's the thing, I feel like I see that a lot of times, you know, at least I sense that from the outside. Same happened to Astralis, right? They and I know that from inner workings as well, you had this amazing lineup, you had this amazing period where you were the number one team, the number one organization. That also means that the salaries of the players obviously were extremely high, and you're probably the team in the world that paid the most in terms of raw salaries. And You lose Device, who goes to NIP, and then was it Dupuy and Magis who went to Vitality, and instead of, you know, keep investing the same amount of money or at least close to it, they just saw that as an opportunity. Oh, we can save money now. We can get this player that is almost as good, but we save half his salary. Oh, we're going to sign Ster, who's, by the way, doing a good job, but we're going to sign him at one-fifth of the salary of everyone else on the team. Or we're going to sign fucking Lucky and whatever the else they did, right? All to save money. So then over time, you sort of like build your own faith in that regard. And if that's what's happening with G2 as well, if some of those... Because it's not budget signings as well. That's not fair to say, because Mouch was expensive, and Mattis, I believe, from Fnatic as well, was an expensive buyout. Yeah. But yeah, exactly, you know. But I do think that I've at least heard that, you know, the salaries and the expectations and everything has just been brought down a level or two ever since Monesi and Nico left the team. And I get it, you know, they were expensive to have. And, you know, with Monesi and Nico comes great expectations. With less prominent players, you sort of like lower them a little bit. But the problem is that you're also going to lower yourself in the hierarchy, as you described right here. Who's going to join you? Like, if you're the next emerging talent, let's say that there's another Kyusuke coming out there. Let's say that Dukes from Foot, who we're going to talk about later, or Demon from Foot for that matter as well, let's say they keep evolving, you know, and in 6 months from now they're like, they're the guy you want on your team. Like, why would they pick G2 above some of the other big teams? Why would they pick G2 above Mouse, you know? And that's kind of what you're doing when you're playing the, like, it's a short-term gain for a long-term issue. And I think a lot of organizations have done that. And then I get there's a lot of nuance to it. You know, we're also in a period of Counter-Strike where the last 2 years we went from having the format of partnership teams where guaranteed revenue to now you have to perform with VIS, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not trying to simplify it to a point. And you know, to some of the org owners out there, well, Jacob, you don't know nothing about the economy. I tend to believe that I actually understand the landscape quite well. All I'm saying is that it is a short-term gain that you get in that regard by treating your players and treating your organization like that for a long-term problem. And I feel like there's enough case studies out there for that not to be the thing you should go around it if you want to be relevant for a long time and for the future as well, because Astralis was a great example, Fnatic did it to themselves, NIP to some extent. If we go all the way back, I wouldn't be surprised if G2 is in the same, you know, pain cave right now. It would take a big investment and a big change of roster, as you said, an overhaul, or it would take that they win the battle that I think is going to come, which I think is super, super fun and interesting, you know, where teams like Na'Vi, teams like FaZe, teams like G2, let's see who else fucks it up, you know, in the first 4 or 5 months here and doesn't do well at Cologne. But I think there's going to be a massive roster shuffle by summer, because we have a lot of big names, a lot of big organizations, and still organizations with a decent budget that is simply not performing at the moment, that is being outperformed by the Paravisions of the world, that is being outperformed by the Mongol who keep, you know, just switching one player for another and seemingly still make it to the playoff every single time, a Roar for that matter as well. So I think that battle is going to be interesting, and whoever loses that battle of G2, FaZe, Na'Vi, and let's see if someone else joins that list, is probably going to have the same fate as Astralis is having right now, where they become irrelevant, where Fnatic is irrelevant, where NIP to some extent is irrelevant. So I got to be honest with you in that regard. Yes, I have history with G2 as well, in the sense that they were my favorite team when Monesi and Nico were on the team, because I think they were the most fun team to watch. The combination of Nico, Monesi, and Hunter, for that matter, in his prime, was just beautiful to watch. I will say, though, that I don't really care whether the name is G2 or whether the name is FaZe or whether the name is Na'Vi. What I look forward to is see one of those teams explode, and then hopefully the two other, you know, benefit from that.
Actually, since you referenced them, why don't we just pivot to that? Another team I wanted to talk about, it's one I've been talking about on a lot of my shows, is I think the revelation of 2026. The funny thing is, fans would have assumed it would be Paravision because of the breakout of Blast Bounty. Bro, it's this team, Foot Esports, where people don't know, as far as I know from other esports, Foot is actually like a Turkish organization, bizarrely. It's like it's one, like it's not like a famous one out. Like I only knew about them from Valorant, where they had like a Turkish team or something. And they signed this squad, if people don't know, was the squad that was literally Na'Vi Jr. last year. And if everyone remembers, there was a period, it was about like almost two-thirds of the way through the year, where there was that weird stat that was like Na'Vi Jr. themselves are like 30th or something on like HLTV rankings. And essentially they're one of the only academy squads that was actually fucked by being an academy squad, because what happened was they couldn't then enter tournaments for teams at that level because the main Na'Vi's team would be in that tournament, so they were prohibited because obviously you can't have your academy team and your main team players. So they were essentially too good to be an academy squad, and they broke off. They're now their own org. They're even the one, if people don't know, I had this recently confirmed by someone, they're the team that did that cool thing where, because every other big org is trying to cynically snipe VRS cores, they're the ones that supposedly have like a thing in their contracts that say you can't just sign three of them as a core and buy the core. You have to buy each player like individually, basically. And I've heard that they're going to charge quite a lot for these players because, mate, there's two angles to this that I think are crazy. One is, as an entire team, even though, listen, we can get some of the players in the moment, I think there's some obvious players that have flaws in this team. I'm just amazed how many players are good in this team though, mate. This isn't even just like, you know, oh, there's one guy that's good, and bro, there's like at least two players are really good. I think you can even argue, because I mean, fuck, what a crazy renaissance for Laux, the guy we'd all written off from like 2-3 years ago from Bleed, etc. Even he's been doing pretty well. So like, actually, it's shocking how many good players there are. And then also, mate, the other part that I think this reflects on that no one's thought through is this. Bro, we just had the whole discussion for the last year in 2025 of like, who can Na'Vi really sign though? And sadly, because we all assume, unless you're some team with hype like Mouse NXT, we all just assume your academy players are never really going to be at the level of the complete pro. Bro, if I'm Na'Vi even now, I'm thinking, maybe I should have taken another one of these players. Like, they were right there at the time. Like, I could have just moved the guy over. I could have tested him out, sent him back. Now they're gone, mate. Like, unless you've got one of those little bounce buyback clauses, those players are gone and you're just in the market like everyone else. Because I have to say, mate, if this team itself doesn't literally like, I mean, I'm imagining they can't have great funding because, like I say, the org's not a massive one. Unless they accomplish something insane now, it just seems obvious this is where everyone's going to come and poach players. Like, again, if I was FaZe, I'd be all over this. If I was Liquid, any of the teams that need, like, a potential up-and-comer, like, this team's just locked into a bunch of them, mate. What do you think? Because I'm genuinely shocked by the results. I've watched nearly all their games they played at the Tier 1 lands. And I'm not even exaggerating, bro. They almost never get smashed. Like, they either beat good teams, it's actually shocking how many good teams they've already beaten, by the way, or they just play like the best teams in the world, like three map series, they lose 13-10 or OT. Like if anything, the one thing you could put against them, because they are inexperienced, is yeah, they do lose a lot of close games and OTs. It's understandably, you know, they don't have like a world-class idea. I don't even know, by the way, I had to look up. Their coach is just some guy almost made for a meme. Like, he's actually called Coolio, like the fucking gang. Been saving off my life, living in a gang. Like, no one's even heard of this guy. It's not even like it's some, you know, I'd understand if it was like, you know, some fucking guy, Kane from the Ukrainian scene had gone and he was meant to, this team has just come out of nowhere. It's crazy. What do you think of this team?
I think they're fucking nice to watch play. And I think that, as you said, like, yeah, I think you hit the nail right there by saying that the results don't even justify how well they're playing. I think when I'm watching them play, you know, eye test, I think they're much better than the results are actually showcasing. And the results are quite decent. What they did in Quacko was okay. What they did at Kushner Poker was more than okay. Obviously, for them not to make the playoff disappointing, they definitely had the level to be there. And I'll be honest, there's at least two teams I think they're better than are in the playoff. And I don't have to mention any names. I'm sure you can look up the two teams yourself and see who's in the playoff and figure out who I mean. At least that will activate your brain a bit. But to be completely honest, I think I wanted to say this on the desk, but I didn't have time for it. I think, and that would be my hot take, I very much agree. I think Foot is a team that plays way more experienced than they actually justify themselves to be. Then the 19.2 years of age on average, you know, it's a very young squad. The oldest player is 20 years of age, the youngest is 17. You know, there's no experienced player within,
but it's even the point I made on Twitter. That's why I actually realize now we were a little bit unfair to Laux. He's only 20 now, bro. That means that when he was first in those teams, he was like 17 18. Like, we were all acting like he's 25 and he's done or something. Like, he's still a pup.
Yeah, we kind of didn't give him a fair chance in that regard, but thanks to Donk and Molodoy for that matter. You know, they're the one screwing with our perspective in that regard, so he can tell them to send him a thank you card. I think Foot is a really, really good team. And I kind of, this is a hot take, you know, and I'll stand by this hot take, and I may be wrong, you know, and it's probably a little bit far-fetched hot take. I think Foot in 6 months will be a better team than Paravision. And I think Paravision is a very good team.
I like it.
I think Paravision is here to stay. I think Paravision is obviously in the playoff once more here at Inclusion Poker, but I don't see them go away from top 8, top 10. But I think Foot is going to enter top 10, and I think they're going to be part of top 10 if they continue the progress they're on right now. Because I feel like whenever I watch them play, that they get better and better and better. And where you really hit the nail was when you're saying that they're competitive in every single game. I remember I was looking up the stats, you know, as a preparation for the Foot versus Paravision game, the game that decided whether or not they would make the playoff, which they lost. And I think the five maps they had lost in the tournament up until that point, four of them were in overtime. Four of them were 13-11 or overtime or 13-10, which means that you're hyper-competitive in every single map you're playing. And then, yes, as you said as well, well, you're losing a lot of those scenarios. You know, you're going into overtime and maybe you're losing your nerve or maybe you don't have the experience to deal with it. But there's only one way of gaining that experience, and that's by putting yourself in that position over and over again. And they've done that in one tournament more than a lot of teams would do in 6 months. So I have very big faith that this team, if they manage to stay together, if no one is getting poached or if none of them, and that's another issue, we spoke about that last episode as well, if someone develops an ego, you know, if someone is hearing out that, I heard G2 want me, maybe I want to go to G2, you know, so you lose focus on what is the project of Foot. But if they manage to stay together and if they manage to stay laser focused, they'll qualify for the major and they'll be part of stage 2 at the major as well. Yes. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're part of stage 3 as well, and I wouldn't even be surprised if they're one of the teams contending for the playoff. Now, I'm not saying that trees grows into heaven, you know, in a very short time. All I'm saying is, with how young they are, with how experienced and how well they're playing, with how controlled aggression they're playing with as well, it's not like this.
No.
Like watching a team of five Borises who are just running around who have insane aim and granted a lot of face it. And I think it was Mattia who said, like, they shoot better than Furia, they shoot better than some of the best teams in the world. Not sure I agree with that. I think there's more to that team than just aim, but that's an easy way of sort of like disqualifying that they're more than just a bunch of aimers. I think they're really, really, really good, and they excite me a lot. And as I said, you know, during the Blast show as well, I can't really point at any team right now that excites me that is not already a known quantity. I think Foot is the only one where I feel like this is an up-and-coming team, and I feel quite certain that they'll be hanging around for a long time. And worst case, as you said as well, then they'll get poached. You know, you'll see a couple of the players moving to different teams, but then it'll be interesting to follow in those different teams, because I really, really think they're good. You know, I'm really, really hyped and really excited about this young team that I think is one of the only teams right now out of all the teams that is not, you know, established with Intel 10 that is actually exciting. You know, I have no interest right now in Big. I have no interest in Astralis just yet. You know, they're showing maybe glimpses of potential. I think Foot is the real deal, and I think with time they'll be great.
No, I'm with you. I also think as well, like, your hot take about the Paravision angle, it's not even that crazy a hot take. It is a hot take, but I would say, because I too a fan, because what, Paravision won an event, they're still, like, imagining, I think, a delusional ceiling for the team. But I do think if you look at this team, like, first of all, whereas actually I think Paravision have shown that, like, some of that firepower was fool's gold. The Nautic guy isn't even close to the level he was at that one LAN. Like, they have a couple of players that are good, but they don't actually have that crazy a squad. It is mainly Jame and his style of play, and that's what they're winning off. The difference is, Foot is, like, the opposite. They have, like, loads of firepower, right? Match is definitely wrong, by the way. He's saying that because, yes, his team would fucking lose to Foot a bunch of times if they played them. Like, that's just a convenient way to say it. And also, since everyone says that his team has all firepower, it's just a convenient angle. So, like, oh, they shot harder than us. I don't know that I believe that, mate. I think you could get five or six teams that shoot harder than this squad. But I agree with what you say stylistically, though. That's the cool thing about them. They're not doing that shit where they play some Randy Online style, like you say, like some Boros shit. Then they come to LAN, and like a million teams in CS history have learned is, like, you come to the LAN and you think, I'm just going to do the shit I do online, and it doesn't work on LAN, mate. Like, on LAN, people, like, suddenly players, like, the joke would be in modern day, player like fucking Crims isn't even a good player online. He probably eat your lunch on LAN, you know, he make all the right moves, he'll pick you off when you make a push on your own, and no fun. This team actually plays together, bro. It's mad how decisive they are. That's even the crazy thing. I know fuck all about this Crabbeny guy that people claims the IGL, but he must be doing a half decent job, because the team's all on one page. The funny thing is as well, Pip, this just shows you how people sometimes do fail. like picking the right tier two people to hype. Because if you remember last year, there actually was a period of time, I think it was around the middle of last year, where one of those Overdrive rumors where he just posts shit on his Telegram and it gets to Twitter, was that it would be Cemetery, the AWPer, that would come to this team and replace Wonderful in Na'Vi. The joke is, the reason why that, I hope that was just a totally made up, you know, Overdrive heard some bullshit and said it, is because the joke is, I actually think the Cemetery guy is one of the not good players in this team, like the AWPer. I think he's actually just mid as fuck, mate. It's the Riflers that seem like straight fire to me. Like, as you say, it's the Demon and the Jux guy. And if people don't know, the Jux guy is like 17 years old. Like, this guy looks like an actual legit, like, I agree, unfortunately, Keisuke and Donk have ruined all our brains where we think, like, yeah, to be a rookie means you can also be, like, the best player in the world. Like, no, if we take it back down to CS outside of those two players, this is, like, a really promising player, mate. Like the joke is, like, within a year or so, this guy probably should be on, like, fucking G2 or something, or Liquid or FaZe, or it looks like the prospect, the talent is there.
100%. I think there's a... And that's why I'm also quite comfortable saying, you know, the Paravision hot take, let's call it that. I agree, you know. I really, really agree. I think Paravision are doing it in their own way, and I think they're really making the most out of what they have to work with. And I don't see, and I may be wrong, you know, but I, as you said, like, I don't see Enoda developing that much further. And I know they're a young squad as well, so you'd give them the benefit of the doubt and you'd give them the age. I think they've gotten a lot out of those players already by now, but I see... And it may just be the eye test, and it may be that I'm just a little bit hyped on them right now. But when I watched them on the server, I don't know what it is, but it's the crosshair placement, it's the movement, it's the fluidity in how they work the map. They almost remind me of a young Heroic back in the day when they kind of put this proactive Counter-Strike, especially on the CT sides, on the map. You know, the way they play Mirage on CT side, they're constantly doing something. Like, they're constantly trying to get a read, get some information that then would enable another player to do something on a different portion of the map, that would enable a third player to do something different. They never stand still.
They're also, by the way, as you'll point out, they're also low-key, specifically on Mirage, one of the best teams in the world. Like, already, they're already, like, they have an insane record on that map, mate.
Yeah, they really have found a way to put that proactive Counter-Strike, you know, on the map again. You know, I'm not saying they're a one-to-one copy of Heroic, and I don't know if Krabani or Coolio, the coach for that matter, is inspired by that style. I think pretty much everyone adopted what Heroic did back in the day, and maybe that's another episode where we talk about cultural impact, because they kind of inspired everyone to play better Counter-Strike, even though they were never really considered the best in the world. But I see a lot of the old Heroic with KDN, Staun, and Tessus in. I see a lot of that in this young squad as well, and overall, just a very impressive team, you know, and even more so, as I said, the fact that it remained competitive, the fact that no team so far, not Furia, not some of the other top teams they've made, have not been able to pick a map against them, own them, and move on to the next one. Like, no map is lost beforehand. They go into a game that is for foot, right? They go into overtime, they lose 13-11, and as I said, yeah, you're losing a lot of those close games, and probably that comes down to experience, or maybe you just lack that extra inch, etc. But you get that over time, but there's no one who's able to punish pick them. There's no one who's able to outplay them in the veto. There's no one who's have been able so far in 2026 to go in against a game versus foot and be like comfortable winning your own map pick. We're talking about a team that is not in top 10. We're talking about a team that, you know, 3 months ago, most people probably didn't know existed or haven't heard about them and at this scale of Counter-Strike. And we're talking about a team that's played Furia a couple of times now and probably, you know, I know they lost a couple of series versus Furia, but we should have beat them a couple
could
of times.
Could have won every time, as far as I can tell.
Online series?
Yeah.
Exactly. The Blast Online series, they could have won that. The one here in PGL Krushna Poker, they could have won that. I really, really, really think it's a team that we have to pay attention to. And as I said, I hope for my own sake, and I guess for all the fans' sake as well, that they manage to stay together at least up until Cologne. I want to see them qualify for Cologne. Yeah. I want to see what they can do at Cologne, and then let's see what happens in that roster period. But for now, let them play together and let them use that experience to get better, because I'm sure what happened here in Cluj, that hurt them. Obviously, we saw the interview from Longs as well, you know, very heartfelt interview. He's obviously Romanian, so he would have loved to be in the arena, but it's something you learn so much from, and given that they are so young, and given that, as you said as well, I feel like the individual skill of the team is so high, then they're only going to get better, and they're going to get better fast.
Right, one team we've obviously addressed many times, but it's just an appropriate moment to do it again, is in a world where you have teams like the Foots of the world threatening to take playoff spots, the sort of teams they're already moving past for my money are teams like FaZe Clan. Like, at least, you know what? If we bang on all the time about Mouse and that, they at least make the fucking playoffs, mate. Even G2 makes the odd one. FaZe is actually just completely irrelevant, Pimp. Like, when I even watch most of these games, the joke is they even do this thing where if you don't watch all the matches, you won't realize how bad they are. Because they do that thing, Pimp, which is like a bad sign, in my opinion, which is when you have people like Twist and Frozen, these are people who are very confident players, by the way. They have a lot of self-esteem. They know they're good. What happens is FaZe, if they play, like you saw it in this Falcons match here, mate, or if they play one of the best teams, it's like they get up for the game and like, all right, fuck yeah, like we can still do it. Like we could, they, you know, we do, and they'll play one great map, you know. But then you put them against, like you see here, like Paravit, they just get fucking comprehensively beaten. Like, and this Astralis result is actually pathetic, mate. Like, I don't even think Astralis himself are that good, and they're just fucking 2-0 and you just see out the tournament, mate. And remember, I know this is the one that Ori Spirit skipped, but even so, like, if you're supposed to believe in the FaZe miracle run for the major, you've got to at least make a few playoffs, because for a start off, surely the magic of FaZe has to be on a fucking stage. Like, if you can't get to the stage, there's no point even in the project. Like, that's where it's supposed to have the power spike or whatever. Like, you don't even get a chance to do that. So, even though I know it's a lot of the same complaints, like, mate, I'm just so done with this squad. Like, I don't know. I don't even really believe. And this is the other reason I've always thought it was money related, Pimp. Because Carrigan isn't an idiot. You might think Twist has some weird decisions about things he's done in his career. I don't think he really thinks Jacob and Brokey are good enough. Like, come on, mate. Maybe in an interview, he might say something like, you know, bro, we all believed in Broker. You can believe all you like, mate. When you go into the server, do you actually think you're going to win this game? I feel like the whole team even looks checked out, mate. Like, they just know this isn't the team.
I very much agree. I mean, if you take away the major run, which obviously was a massive fluke, and I think everyone was even comfortable saying that. I think Carrigan even hinted that in some of the interviews, you know, saying that, I don't know what we're doing here in the final, but, you know, let's try and win, you know, haha. And they knew it, we knew it, everyone knew it. That's fair enough, you know. I don't want to hold that up against him, because it was in isolation, you know, insane, and it was an insane story, the way they almost exited stage one and then got into to the major grand final. So thank you for giving us those memories, but that's it, you know. I was checked out on FaZe, you know, before the major. I was almost checked out on FaZe when we started the season, and it's just that my confidence was so low in FaZe that when they lost the online game versus Eyeballers at Blast Bounty, I was like, okay, fuck that. That team is done for. And I know that's ridiculous to say, because it's an online game. It's the first game of the season. It came straight from the HLTV Awards. But you just don't lose a game to Eyeballers. And again, don't take anything away from them. They're doing a cool project with the Swedes over there. But if you're FaZe Clan, you know, have a little respect for yourself. You beat Eyeballers. You at least make the playoff at Blast Bounty. Or at least you win the first game, and then maybe you lose to a good team in the second round, and then we can excuse you and say, yeah, it was the beginning of the season. Krakow, not any better. Here, Christian Poker, I agree. Losing to Astralis in the fashion they did it in. I was running the game on my secondary screen while working on another one, and I was just thinking to myself, it's embarrassing, because I agree. I don't think Astralis is, they're not good, you know, they're not bad either, and they're also trying to reinnovate their international lineup. But again, if you're FaZe and you have a bit of respect for yourself, you beat Astralis. Like, you beat that team. You don't get eliminated to Astralis, and sure as hell not 2-0. Now, where I really, really start to lose my shit now, and this is where it gets personal for me, Frozen seems like he's had enough. Frozen, Mr. Stability, you know, the European Quesarada, the guy I could always count on, the guy that would be consistent no matter what FaZe would throw at him, no matter how bad they would be, no matter how good they would be, you could always count on Frozen to find impact and do his job and just be rock solid and a sick player. I really, really appreciate Frozen a lot. I think he's checked out. I think he seems done by. I think he's probably thinking to himself, fuck that rumor about me joining Na'Vi. I don't know if that was true, but I wish I could get out of this shit show. And I think that's what the FaZe players are feeling right now. And I feel for Twist as well. You know, you come back to what is essentially your dream comeback. You want to go back to FaZe. You want to go back with Carrigan. You want to go back with Frozen. You want to go back with Rain. Well, guess not, because Rain is not there anymore. And I'm not sure if he knew that or not, but I feel like it's been kind of hinted that he didn't, you know. And now you're stuck in FaZe. You're stuck with Brokey. You're stuck with Jacob, who I agree that they're not good enough. You know, they could probably be players on teams that is, you know, send Brokey to, I don't know where you send Brokey, whatever. Send Jacob to a team like Astralis. Send Jacob to Gamer Legion. Let him develop. Let him prove himself. You know, send him to Foot, whatever they lose Jukes because he's going somewhere. I don't give a fuck. Jacob is not good enough to be part of FaZe Clan, and that is evident. Brokey right now is not good enough to be part of FaZe Clan, and that is evident. But what really pisses me off is that I'm starting to feel now Frozen is taking a hit as well. Like, he can't stand up for that shit anymore. Like, he's been so stable. He's been so good. He's been doing so much better than anyone could ask him for in what has been a very, very bad period for now, a year for FaZe. Again, exclude the major, look at the results outside of the major. It's been horrendous for a long time. And I'm starting to feel that Frozen has had enough. And when that's the case, then to me, that team is dead. That's done for. I that would be the craziest comeback ever if that team, or even four of the players with just one new addition, finds a way back to top-tier consistent Counter-Strike. I simply don't see it happen. If I'm Kerrigan, I'm going to a new project. I'm going for a fresh start. I want to try something new. If I'm Frozen, I would love to join Na'Vi. And if I'm Twist, you know what? G2 could probably use you. Get rid of Melt, put Twist in those roles, and you would have a banger team. So there we go. I fixed it for you.
Yeah, the other problem is, the reason why I think so many people still discuss FaZe as, like, add this player instead of Brokey or Jacob and, you know, we're cooking again, is because you look at those three players you're talking about, Kerrigan, Twists and Frozen, like, today look like they could walk into any team that needs that role and be a world-class player in their role and take their team to, fully enough, a major final or win a two-year or trophy. So it feels like all you need to do is just make the other player moves and you get it. But I'm with you. When you consider how long they've now had these players, like, people forget this, bro. Twist didn't join just before the major. He was there for a few months before that. Like, he was, I think Pro League was the first tournament he played or whatever. So he's played like you know, six or seven lands or something at this point in time for FaZe. I don't think people realise, for all three of those players, if they aren't going to make roster moves, I agree, they're just wasting their time. They're just spinning their wheels and treading water, because think about the examples. Like, so if you read between the lines, he didn't overtly say it, but he agreed with the sentiment in an interview. Frozen basically admitted he did have an offer where he could have gone to Na'Vi, and that, like, he chose not, it was implied he chose not to do it. And the rumour I heard was that he, you know, he felt some sort of loyalty towards Kerrigan, or maybe he knew Twists was coming back. If you notice, I think the timing on that is also super suspicious, Pimp. Right around the time of that middle of the year player break after the major, which is exactly when in theory you'd think someone like an Na'Vi, remember they went out in the top eight and then had a fairly irrelevant season, that's exactly when you would make a move like bring a Frozen. I also do think as well, of all the non, like, Ukrainian and Russian players, Frozen looks like he'd be a perfect player to play under Blade. I think he'd fucking love it, probably even like the Alexi B system. It seems like he's a guy who'd vibe with it, so a lot of that move made sense. So I wonder if, like, in FaZe they told him, like, don't worry, like, Kerrigan's staying around and also he's not retiring, because was the whole rumour at the time, and also we'll get Twists back, so it's like, you know, we're going to remake the squad, and then look, maybe you add in a little sprinkle of delusion, which is like, oh, when we get, because they tried to push this angle, remember, when Twists rejoined, it's like, and then maybe Brokey comes back, cause it's the Three Musketeers again, you know, that all that fucking marketing angle that they go with. The problem is none of that happened, and I think for all three of those players, what's the point of being in this team? Like, as we said, mate, you did it quickly there. Twists could join tons of teams, mate. I mean, a lot of people respect this guy, and he's a very good player. He is a very good player. The Frozen one, by the way, if that really was cause of loyalty, I mean, listen, I've got some bad news for you, mate. There's a reason why, even though we all will like the idea of loyalty, it often in esports isn't a very good move, mate. Like, in this case, let's say you've been loyal to Twists and Kerrigan in this regard, so you want to play with them again. Well, FaZe hasn't been very loyal to you, mate. They're just wasting your prime. Like, you're sitting here in your prime still waiting to win a major. That's what you want to do, presumably. And I agree as well, mate. The other thing people forget is good players aren't just going to stay good forever. I mean, mate, even fucking Pete Kenny S got worn down eventually when, like, it was just, you know, that RPK wasn't that good. And, like, eventually, you just can't put a billion hours into a server to barely win a game 13-11 and still go out in the round of eight or something. Like, that's just not cool. Like, eventually that'll get to everyone. So the other reason why I think this team has to change is we're already talking, like, right, well, you've got the Kerrigan. Bro, eventually you're not even going to have those players. Like, by the way, God forbid now, Twist has already took a little downturn. Imagine he has, like, a bad month. What would this team even be? They'd be completely irrelevant.
Yeah, they would be completely irrelevant, and I think they are completely irrelevant, to be completely honest. I also do think there's something to be said about the whole, you know, situation surrounding FaZe Clan, and obviously them, you know, what was it, departing the streamer side of FaZe Clan, or content creation, and having their own esports division because all this shit that was going on. I don't want to say this because I would love to have the FaZe brand around in Counter-Strike, but as I said before, you know, Astralis was also a brand that I didn't want to lose, you know, 4 years ago, and I could never imagine a Counter-Strike without Astralis, but now I think we have to get used to the fact that Astralis may not be a super brand anymore. I'm sure if I asked you in 2015 or 2014, and I said, well, maybe Fnatic in 2020 is not going to be around anymore, you'd be like, fuck off, you know, Fnatic is a stable in Counter-Strike, they've been around for 20 years, you know, that team is never going to go anywhere, that name you want in, but at this point, if... I don't even care if FaZe, you know, disrupts and goes away from Counter-Strike. If that means that you can then send, as you said, Kerrigan to a new cool project, you can send Twist somewhere that's super, super cool, and you can send Frozen to Na'Vi or wherever else he wants to go, because I think he's, if any of those three, I think he's the one that is still in the highest regard. I think he's the one that you want on your team, and you can pretty much slot him in wherever you want, more or less. You know, obviously you're not going to join a Fury, and it's going to be tough to convince Falcons or anyone else to do a roster change with his role, but I think he's really, really good. Now, one thing I want to add to that as well, and this is just pure speculation, but I can't help to put the similarities between Twist and Kirby, what he kind of experienced as well. Kirby from Astralis leaves Astralis, goes to North, you know, thinking to himself that that's going to be a great project, and then he finds out, you know, that was the worst decision he's ever done in his life, and he could just never really recope, you know, did a couple of good months of playing, and then as soon as he realized that that project didn't work out, it was just getting worse and worse and worse, and he kept regretting and regretting and regretting and regretting not going to Astralis. Let's not forget that Twist could have joined Vitality, as far as I'm aware. You know, they wanted him, what was it, a couple of time ago, where he decided to go to Team Liquid. Vitality came asking, as far as I'm aware, for Twist, and Liquid said no, like, because Twist just joined Liquid together with the Kanyan lineup that obviously didn't work out. So Twist could have waited out maybe 6 months, and it's always, you know, easy to play Captain Hindsight in that regard. But there's a world where Twist could have forced his way, if he really, really wanted to, into Vitality. I'm sure they would have found a solution if he firmly said that I don't want to play for Team Liquid. Like, I really don't want to be here at all. I'm going to bench myself, you know, if you don't sell me to Vitality. More often than not, we even see it in football with some of these mega transfers. The players have... they have too much of a say in that, you know, and they'll find a way to force the club to sell them or resolve the situation. So if I'm Twist right now, I can understand if you're thinking to himself, fuck man, I could have been part of Vitality, but I had to play with Kadian in Liquid and I had to go through all that shit and become the in-game leader. And then when I finally thought I did something good for myself by rejoining FaZe Clan and getting back home, they're giving me a washed-up Brokey, they're giving me a Jacob, and they're giving me a team that doesn't work out anymore, despite me, myself, as you said as well, Twist playing some beautiful Counter-Strike and some good Counter-Strike. Where the fuck would FaZe be outside of the Major if Twist didn't come back and play well? Then they don't have the results they're having right now. They wouldn't even be a top 10 team. They would be at risk of not qualifying for the Majors. They would be at risk of not being part of the VS that gets automatic invites to the biggest and best events right now. I think that's how bad it would be for FaZe had it not been for Twist. So I can imagine why Twist would be thinking to himself, you know, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I could have been part of Vitality, and look what they're doing right now. And let's be honest, you know, had it been Twist coming in instead of Spinks back then, yes, Robs is doing a great job, you know, I still think Vitality would have won a lot of stuff with Twist, and now he's just stuck in this scenario where it's so tough for a player to get away from that thought, and that ruined Kirby. I know firsthand, I talked to him when he was doing some analysis jobs for Blast, like that completely ruined him mentally. He could never recoup from that. I hope that's not the case for Twist, which is why I hope Twist gets to leave FaZe Clan, or at least gets a team within FaZe Clan that is worthy of his time.
I'll give you the last angle, and it goes like this. One thing that's actually weird is now, because he's won everything, if anything, people are actually slightly overrating Robs. Put it this way, we just did an episode of Hot Take Point Made where the take is, it's actually Robs is the GOAT of Counter-Strike, because what this person did was just count all the trophies and the resume, and you're like, he's doing all these Grand Slams, he's won all these... It's like, well, he has, but the problem is, like, a bit like the whole reason why I hope no one ever actually believed the whole, wait, Dupree has 5 majors, maybe he's the GOAT. It's like, but he wasn't the best player, that's how... works. Like, I'm sorry, that's like the dumbass logic that people do use in football, where they try to tell me that because Ronaldo was gone, like, it's Modric and Toni Kroos who have all the UCLs. It's like, they wouldn't have fucking any if Ronaldo hadn't been there at the beginning, though, would they? Maybe at the end, even then, that's the same project, just with extra players added. They'd maybe have one or two. They wouldn't have 6, would they? Think it through logically. Like, they wouldn't have had the ones where he scored like the 15 goals a season. So similarly, right? Like, what I always say about Rops, you'll see where the angle's going here, is what I say is this. I'll tell you what he is the goat of, though. Fucking career decisions, though. He's made some fucking amazing, like, knowing when to stay and when to go. He only made one wrong move his whole career, in my opinion, which is there's that one extra year during COVID where he stayed in Mouse for an extra period. And even then, I heard it's because actually Mouse at the time broke the bank and gave him a very good salary. I think they even offered him more than like a Vitality or someone offered him. And then aside from that, people don't know, he had the choice between Vitality and FaZe. He went to FaZe. He had that fucking mini era there where they won all the prestige events. He held out for the extra year, by the way, still looks good because of all the finals runs, etc. And at the end, right, when it was still perfect time, where he still had enough cashier with the other players, he got his move, amazing free signing to go to Fantasy. Now he has this gig era, might even have a fucking second era. That bit, if I'm going to say he's one of the best, bro, on the other side, Twister's one of the worst. Like, here's the funny thing, Pimp. If I go back, I can totally forgive the initial move to Team Liquid, because in that point in time, people have to remember, Vitality was in what you'd call English in flux. No one knew which direction they were going to go. Yeah, they had Zewu, but for example, Zonic had left already. You had this period where it was the end of CSGO even. You were in CS2 now. There were so many moving parts at the time. I don't think you could look at it and see it was a slam dunk. They'd be great like this, right? And actually, if people forget, that Team Liquid squad, it's actually epic how bad it was. Like, that on paper should have been an awesome roster. And remember, people always forget this. At the time, the name on the board was not Skulls. That was at the end. It was Caserato. So imagine that same squad with Cadian, who we all thought was good. You have fucking Naft, Twists, Caserato. Like, that was a cool, yeah. That squad looked very impressive. Like, I can see why he took. But I'll tell you what, every decision after that one was a fail, mate. Because remember, the first one was, it wasn't just the Cadian one hasn't worked. It's like, right, now I become IGL, which is like, okay, I told people this story. I heard at the time already, maybe again Vitality was interested. This is 2024, we're talking about, like, right in the corner to the middle. I heard they wanted to get rid of a Sphinx. This was one of the players they already had past history, like, just like they got Ropslater. They wanted this guy, he's one of the people on their little short list, and has a great reputation among other pros. So he chose essentially to use the power of I could have left to be like, right, I want the power to take control. So he took control. But people forget this. He then got two seasons of doing that. And both times they made these roster moves, which for whatever reason, it was implied even by him, maybe he was involved in them. That's one of the weirdest parts ever to me. Like, if you imply you were part of bringing Ultimate in, then how can you then leave Liquid later and be like, Liquid sucks? You're part of the reason why this sucked, bro. Like, why are you getting involved with signings like that? Like, it's one thing if you go, the coach did that, I had nothing to do with that. You just brought him in and then I just played with him. So I think you made a couple of bad decisions then. And this is why I think he fucked up, mate. Because at the end, when he makes the move back to FaZe, I remember even thinking myself, like, but why though? Like, you going to FaZe is the only good thing about that team right now. Like, you're basically giving them, like, a lifeline when they were about to just drown in, like, a whirlpool, and they were almost under the surface, mate. Like, that's the reason why I'll always remind people of this. Everyone now can claim all sorts of shit about the whole FaZe Simple move. The reason everyone was hyped about FaZe Simple is because it gave you the delusion that maybe they will be world-class again. Maybe they actually could be, like, in the final of a minute. But for real, it's not even like a fluke. Like, they could actually... That doesn't exist in the FaZe that Twist joined. And in fact, I'll even speculate. If the team you have to join in the second season of last year is FaZe, I don't think you had any options left, mate. I don't think any of these names we're listing were even on a shortlist. Like, they already had their squads. Obviously, you can't get a Vitality now. That's all. That ship's long gone sailed. And I'll just throw this out there. I didn't make him say this. He's one of the few players who's publicly implied he'll never join Falcons. So there's not even that option. So at this point, mate, he's also put himself in a tough spot in his career. Like, I feel like it's only playing great in a bad phase that'll even remind people this guy's a good player. And he was actually an excellent player last season. It just doesn't amount to anything.